I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm John Morgan.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. Mike Polignano is away today. It is the Christmas season, the season for travel, and the season for internet problems, apparently. So he'll be back with our next podcast. And so John and I are going to do today's podcast together. So the big thing that we have to deal with is not Christmas. No, 'tis the season for Star Wars now, according to Walt Disney. This is the season for Star Wars. And I guess they decided to time their last three Star Wars movies around Christmas time so they can sell lots and lots of merchandise to kids, which makes sense from a business point of view, a very calculating business point of view.
Well, Star Wars kind of set the paradigm for that. I remember when I was a kid in the 70s and, you know, collecting the Star Wars figures, that was sort of like the first time that was done where the marketing of the film and the toy industry kind of worked in tandem. It's kind of become a pattern now with everything, all the films of this type.
Exactly. And I would have no objection to that if the movies were better. But as with the first in this new trilogy that they're doing, The Force Awakens, the new movie, which is called The Last Jedi, is not really very good. And we're going to do lots of spoilers in this. We're going to assume that you've already seen it. And honestly, if we do spoil it for you a little, well, that's like spoiling a heap of rotten garbage. There's really very little room for ruin, very little room for spoilage in this stinking mass of trash that they have dished up on the screen. So, John, what are your initial impressions of this film?
Well, I really thought you nailed it in the review that you posted at Countercurrents a couple of days ago, but I did think it was better than the Force Awakens, but that's not saying much. it's like all the J.J. Abrams stuff, like he did with the new Star Trek films as well. I mean, they're basically poor imitations, sometimes bordering on parody, although perhaps unintentional, of the originals. And I feel like it's geared both at, you know, people who are 8-year-olds, either literally or mentally. Like, I feel like it's in part targeted at people like me who saw the original trilogy when it first came out. And I guess they think we'll be on some nostalgia trip, but I mean, it's completely different. I mean, even the original trilogy now, except for The Empire Strikes Back, I mean, they weren't really that great, but at least they were original for their time. And they had a human spark in them in terms of the characters and so forth. Whereas now, I mean, these films almost feel like they're generated by computer. There's very little in them that's original or interesting or character development. You know, like, for example, if you compare in the film the supposed training, although I don't know if you'd even call it that, of Rey versus the training that Yoda gives Luke Skywalker in The Empire Strikes Back. I mean, there's no comparison. It's ridiculous in the new film, whereas in the original they were, you know, drawing on all sorts of mythological and religious sources that made it interesting. So I guess I wasn't expecting anything, so I can't say I was disappointed, but it just confirmed in my mind the fact that this new trilogy isn't going anywhere. It's really just a whole marketing ploy. But it was also about a half hour too long. I mean, that whole last battle scene, all I can think is that they were trying to cram in so much from the original films that was redone. They were like, hey, we should have another Hoth battle. And decided to tack that on, which really, you know, I found it quite a drag. You know, it was quite an endurance test to make it to the end of that. I mean, I don't mind long films. I mean, I can sit through a 3-hour Tarkovsky film. Like it's nothing. But when the film isn't giving you much, you feel the time a lot more, in my experience. So,
yeah, I agree. When this battle started at the end, I was looking at my watch and thinking, like, God, you know, this movie has outstayed its welcome.
Yeah.
And what do you do, though? I sat through it to the end because I owe it to my readers. So my general impression was, visually speaking, that it was actually an attractive movie to look at. It had interesting design elements, and it was well filmed. But that was about it. There were some moments that I liked. I liked Yoda's appearance. I liked the fight with the guards in the throne room. I thought that was quite entertaining, just as a physical battle. What are some of the other things that I did enjoy? I do want a crystal fox for Christmas, if anybody out there is listening. You can send me a crystal fox for Christmas. There were things in it that were cute. The bits of humor I did not think undermined the film. There were some people who really didn't like the humor in it. I thought the humor in this was actually stronger than the humor in any other Star Wars film. It was actually funny for the most part, not just sort of groan-inducing.
That seems to be the Abrams influence, because he did that with Star Trek also.
Yeah, that's true.
Although I did have to cringe when, what is it, when the Asian woman pulls up on that speeder bike or whatever it is and says, "Need a lift?" I mean, I actually moaned audibly because that was just so bad.
Yeah, well, that whole character was bad. I did not like her at all. There was a far longer list of bad things than good things. Most of the characters were cardboard cutouts with no depth. This pilot, Poe Dameron, he's totally useless. He's not gelled as any kind of interesting human being. He's just a walk-on cipher type character. Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia was practically dead already through the entire film. She looked and moved like an old vampire, and she was 60 years old when she did this, and she died shortly thereafter, exhausted basically from a lifetime of mental illness and drug use. And I really just wish they had excluded her. She was sucked out into space near the beginning of the movie, and I thought, well, this would be a nice end for Princess Leia, just floating through space. A little sad interlude for those fans who care about her, and then we can get on with the show. But no, they had to resurrect her with a CGI sequence where she flies like a witch through space and then goes back into the spaceship, and then is in a coma for most of the movie, which I think was no stretch for her as an actress. And yeah, I just thought she was never an attractive character. She was only a princess in the Jewish sense, as, you know, abrasive and entitled and bitchy. Never a princess in the aristocratic sense. Nobody that you could respect, nobody with manners, no one with an aura of authority or anything like that. So I always despised that character, and she was even worse in this because she had no life. At least she had life in the original trilogy. But the life was almost gone from her in this particular one.
Her voice was weird, too.
It was just a croak.
It was because they showed, well, since we're doing spoilers, you know, there's that one scene where R2 shows the hologram of Leia from A New Hope.
Yeah.
To Luke, and you see, like, not just how much better looking, but, you know, she sounds normal there. And then you see her in the present day, and it's like, what happened there? I don't know. that has to be somehow related to her drug use or something. I don't know.
They Botoxed her vocal cords, perhaps. Anyway, the character of Rey is still a Mary Sue character. A Mary Sue meaning a character, a girl power feminist character who's being parachuted in, inserted into lots of movies today, who can do anything a man can do, only better, and without any training or effort, apparently. And she's just the Mary Sue from Hollywood's idea, from Gehenna, Mary Sue straight from Gehenna, and she just drives me nuts. And the actress has this sort of man jaw, and her mouth hangs open a lot, and she's pop-eyed. She's obviously more of a comedic actress than anything else because she looks like a goofball. And there was this this one YouTube video, this long review trashing The Force Awakens called The Farce and Gorgeous, where the guy cut together all of her scenes from The Force Awakens with the Benny Hill music behind it. And I have to say that really worked, because she just goes through there with this sort of stupid, slack-jawed expression on her face, and her eyes sort of popped out like she's not too bright and doesn't quite understand what's going on. She's just not a compelling character at all. And
no.
Everyone feels she's a cheat because basically all the things that men do, with great effort and long training, she can do easily. And so basically, in a way, it is kind of a symbol. It's a symbol of the fact that men strive to create civilization, then they hand it over to women because they have bobs and vag privilege, basically, and then it all goes to hell because they don't know what it takes to create it or sustain it. And I feel like, well, that's what's happening to the Jedi Order. You know, feminism is here. The glass ceiling is shattered. An underqualified female affirmative action candidate has arrived to receive the mantle.
Oh, but of course the old establishment has to be destroyed first.
Yeah, yeah.
And Yoda is even like, oh yeah, you know, the Jedi do need to die because, okay, yeah, we have all these great books that contain our scriptures and philosophy, but you know, she knows that just innately.
Yeah, she doesn't need that. She don't need no stinking scriptures.
What did you say? Oh, they weren't exactly page turners. But...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it basically, on the simplest, most obvious level, and the level that the audience takes away, this is just cultural Bolshevism, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all good enough, just as we are, so who needs education? Some of us, well, actually all of us, it turns out. That's the next step. Everybody is going to be able to use the Force without any work at all, because obviously at the present stage of the decline, Rey is this very special person, but eventually, to egalitarianize it completely, everybody's going to have to be able to do this, I guess. And then we'll have a, I guess, paradise, right? When everybody can lift rocks with the power of their mind and so forth. But there's another side to that, though, another interpretation that I think makes it a little more close to the old Star Wars. And I touch on this in my review. The initial gesture where Rey hands the lightsaber to Luke Skywalker, and then he just takes it and throws it over his shoulder. A lot of fans were outraged by that, but I thought, well, this is sort of Zen master behavior.
Right, yeah, I thought that too.
And when Yoda says the girl has everything essential from the books anyway, later it's revealed that she's taken the books and hidden them on the Millennium Falcon, and apparently Yoda knew that. So in a way, there was nothing essential in that tree anyway.
Oh, is that so the books weren't actually destroyed?
No, they weren't destroyed. And
oh, I missed that,
yeah,
somehow. Okay,
and apparently Yoda knew that. But of course, Luke didn't know that. But a lot of Luke's behavior, saying, I just came here to die, leave me alone, all that kind of stuff, pushing her away, that is classic Zen master behavior, because what they try and do to would-be students is they try and chase them off. And they try and chase them off to test their seriousness, to test their resolve. So that struck me as consistent with the overall arc of the mythos, because a lot in the original Star Wars is based on Japanese sources and Japanese archetypes. Darth Vader, I mean, his helmet is basically a samurai helmet with a kind of kendo mask in front of it, right? Especially the case with Kylo Ren's version of the helmet and mask. And, of course, one of the urtexts for the original Star Wars movie is Kurosawa's The Hidden Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly distant. You know, resemblances, but once you look at it, it's like, yeah, I can see resemblances.
Visually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Visually. And in terms of certain plot elements. And then, of course, the Jedi are sort of like, well, they're like samurai in a certain way. They're warriors, yet they have this initiatic element to it. And a lot of their powers are the kinds of powers that are talked about in the Far East and attributed to yogic adepts, the Siddhis, and also these powers that Taoists supposedly have, Taoist martial arts. There's this whole genre that I call flying Chinaman movies, right? where you have, people walking on water and engaged in all kinds of really impossible feats of martial prowess. And that kind of stuff is definitely incorporated into the original Star Wars image of the Jedi. So that makes perfect sense to extend that a little bit with the Zendo kind of hazing. And of course, that's also present in Fight Club, which is mm-hmm. you know, based on the same thing. The Fight Club is like a Zen monastery, and what do the people do when they arrive? Well, they're told that they can't come in. They're not good enough, and they have to wait days and days, and if they still wait for days and days, finally they're allowed in to be trained. So I didn't think that was all that bad, and I thought the people who were complaining about it were the kind of snowflakes that would wash out on the first day.
Well, they probably didn't catch that. Although, of course, it's also similar to what Yoda does
yeah.
when Luke first meets him, because he doesn't even acknowledge being Yoda
yeah.
For several scenes, as I recall.
Yeah. I think within the first scene, eventually it comes out. But yeah, he's sort of Yoda's, oh, he is near. Can you take me to him? You know, that kind of
yes.
thing. Oh, he's very near. Yes, he's right in front of you, in fact. So I do think that isn't all that bad, but it's interesting how outraged a lot of fans were about that. And there is this aspect of Luke Skywalker's going on about how the Jedi Order needs to die and so forth that seems to go beyond that kind of testing, because he's also indulging in a lot of self-recriminations and guilt about his failure with Kylo Ren and so forth. And it seems unlikely, as I put it in my review. I added about a few hundred words to it after I initially published it. But that seems kind of unlikely that he would want to destroy this ancient order that's a pillar of civilization across the galaxy, until you realize, well, there are plenty of white people who support policies that will destroy our race simply because they have a lot of unearned and spurious guilt that they feel
right.
that they need to expiate about things like slavery and colonialism and so forth. So he is engaging in a very white kind of self-recrimination desire to just, you know, dissolve himself, to expiate his crimes there. But in the end, he doesn't. In the end, he passes on the torch to Rey, and you know, Luke Skywalker won't be the last Jedi, but he might be the last white male Jedi.
Most likely.
Yeah, if Disney has anything to say about it. So that's, but that's what we expect from this. The pause awakens and is taking over the Star Wars franchise here, and it's very unfortunate.
Well, that's sort of how I feel. I mean, this isn't just in Star Wars, but in all films being made in recent years, you know, of this type, you know, sort of one things that used to be very mythological and, you know, were derived from, you know, this sort of idea of, what was that term that Joseph Campbell coined for that sort of the one myth that underlies
the monomyth.
Yeah. I mean, for decades that, you know, Hollywood was drawing on that a lot, and you know, we had a lot of very good films came out of that. I mean, George Lucas was very vocal about the fact that he derived the ideas for the original trilogy from Campbell's work, at least in part. But nowadays, you know, everyone has to be an anti-hero, and you know, everybody in this film, even the bad guys like Kylo, they're all conflicted, and they don't want to be doing what they're doing, and they hate themselves. And, you know, even Luke, they're all depicted in this way. And for them to do anything good, it requires sort of this enormous effort at the last moment. You know, like, okay, you know, I'll do this. But, mm-hmm. you know, even then they never really feel completely satisfied with what they're doing. And you see this. There aren't any heroes left in American cinema anymore, that they're all these sort of conflicted anti-heroes or semi-heroes, maybe is a better word. It's just something that the Hollywood doesn't want to do anymore. I mean, the closest character to an actual heroic figure would be Poe, you know, from the original Star Wars films. But what happens? I mean, he declares this mutiny because he understands what's happening better than anybody else, especially was it Admiral Holdo, who that was kind of weird to have, you know, somebody identify with David Lynch films show up in a Star Wars.
Yeah, I was really had high hopes that Laura Dern was going to do something kind of interesting in this.
She wasn't allowed to, though.
Yeah, well, she basically played a, you know, people have been making vicious memes, Admiral Gender Studies Professor, you know, things like that. But yeah, she's got Tumblrite purple hair, and her idea of commanding authority and respect is to go into battle wearing a tiara and an evening gown. It's just so silly and stupid. And she's such, it's such a waste of a good actress on a totally cardboard, disposable character. Again, what I would have loved for them to do is just cut out a lot of these characters, but they can't. Why? Well, because they got to have one of each, right? It's like the cover of every college catalog these days. You've got to have a white one and an Asian one and a black one, right?
Right.
And, you know, the white one might be a male, but preferably a female. And today, preferably a female with purple or blue hair or some stupid color like that. Some color that signifies alienation and gender confusion.
The dynamic between Holdo and Poe is, you know, when he asserts his greater experience and knowledge and says, well, this is what we should do, they sort of put him in his place, right? I mean,
right.
They stun him and then throw him in the brig. It's like, you know, okay, you know, don't overstep your boundaries. It's, you know, don't mansplain to us.
Right. Yeah, it's just ritualistic humiliation of a would-be alpha male.
Right, exactly, which is par for the course in Hollywood.
But it's a feminist mystery play, right?
When he's not around, though, of course, Holdo and Leia kind of admit that they actually, you know, kind of like him in a way, but they would never actually let him know that.
Well, cat ladies love bad boys.
Right.
That's just the truth. But yeah, after Admiral Akbar, who I don't even think gets a single line in the movie, and the guy, you know, who looks like sort of a lobster, boiled lobster colored frog guy, whatever. After he's sucked out into space and killed, practically the entire resistance, as it's called, is run by cat ladies. It's ludicrous. If they wanted to cut characters that are useless characters, well, who could they cut? Well, they should have cut Carrie Fisher. She's dead anyway. They're going to have to explain why she's not in the next movie. They might as well have just had her, you know, airlocked early on, and then we could feel for her. She'd be the sacrificial lamb in the first act, so we know that the First Order is really, really bad, you know?
Right.
And we should have got rid of Finn, or Findu, as I like to call him, and this new Asian girl, Rose, to tempt the vast Asian market. She was totally useless. Admiral Gender Studies Professor should be eliminated. Poe isn't much of a character. If they wanted to develop him into a character, that would be good. Rey is a useless, cardboard, one-dimensional character. The only characters who have any depth at all really are the ones from the original trilogy, and that's really only Luke Skywalker at this point.
And that's only because it was done by previous writers and producers.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That was all established. And here it's a bit, some people feel like it was deconstructed. I didn't think so. I thought this was Luke Skywalker, a plausible Luke Skywalker. Although apparently Mark Hamill didn't like what they did with the character.
On YouTube, there's a hilarious video called Mark Hamill Doesn't Like The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. And it's just clips of all these different scenes in interviews he's done over the last couple of years where it's really obvious how much he dislikes the new films.
Yeah.
He actually says at one point, remember, kids, it doesn't have to be good. It just has to make money.
God. Well, yeah, the poor guy. I mean, I hope they're paying him, you know, a lot of credits, or quatloos or whatever they pay. I hope they're getting him a lot of money for this stuff because it has to be painful. Poor, poor George Lucas, who likened selling the franchise to Disney as selling one's children to white slavers. I feel for this guy. I just feel so bad for
him. He actually said that?
Yeah, he actually said that. It felt like he'd sold his children to white slavers. It's pretty bad. Let's see. Who else could be cut? Captain Phasma, Gwendolyn Christie, or the Brienne of Tarth. She has a tiny role where she just speaks in a beautiful accent and then is humiliated by a Dindu. and this General Hux, who's just ridiculously pompous and, you know, otherwise just a total cardboard character. All these people
can
go.
He's the evil British guy, yeah.
Yeah, the evil British guy, right? And she's the evil British woman. I did think, amazingly, that the Supreme Leader Snoke character was well realized for something that was basically, you know, computer animation. I thought it was kind of remarkable.
He was just kind of like the original Emperor from Return of the Jedi, like redone. I mean, there wasn't anything really unique about him, but I agree that, you know, visually he was very interesting.
Yeah, and I thought Kylo Ren had some potential as a character, honestly.
He was less emo-y than in the last one.
Yeah, there was something there was something more to him than that, but really, even at its best, you're just looking at people who are stand-ins for stuff from the original trilogy, who are being reanimated like corpses, basically, to rake in money based on nostalgia. And that's it. That's just it. And it's so cynical, and it's so calculatedly cynical that you'd think that fans would rebel against it. But no, they want more Star Wars, damn it. They're so hungry for more of what George Lucas created that they go out to these movies, and they're allowing Disney to abuse them. Now, I did think Rogue One was a good movie, just in an absolute terms. I thought it was a good movie and a good Star Wars movie. So Disney can make a good Star Wars movie, but this trilogy, being what it is, namely a what they call soft reboot, basically a remake of the first trilogy,
right,
is revolting in so many ways. And one of the ways that it's revolting is they're remaking it, but they're remaking it as a farce. And they're ruining a lot of characters. The new version, the recurring old characters are being abused and disposed of. And the new characters, who are just remakes of old characters, are just distant, farcical, obvious remakes. And beyond that, this new movie seemed to have stuff in it that was just a calculated attempt to spit in the faces of ardent fans. And there are two things that fit that description. One is the fact that Snoke is just killed and nothing is revealed about his past, his backstory.
Is he even human? I was unclear on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he an alien or just a fucked up human? That was...
Good question. For 2 years now, there are people on YouTube who have been putting out videos, and I'm sure there are blogs and things that do the same thing, about Snoke theories. Who is Snoke? Is he Darth Plagueis? Is he this? Is he that? And they really, really got into this. A lot of time and effort was invested into this. A lot of imagination. What Lucas created still inspires the imagination of a lot of people, and so they go to work on this new stuff with the same assiduousness that they did with the original trilogy and all the books that followed it and everything. But they're coming to realize that there's no there. And all of this is just cynical, shallow, one-dimensional attempts to rake off billions of dollars through nostalgia. And they would have gotten away with it if they hadn't decided to just spit in the faces of these fans by just killing off Snoke with no explanation. And there was a huge amount of fan speculation about Rey's parents, and we were told, they were nobody. They sold you for, you know, gambling money, and they're died and are buried in a pauper's grave, something like that. They're nobody. That was a great big gob of spit in the face of thousands of really serious fans. And the really serious fans, to their credit, now seem to be the ones in full rebellion. It is very interesting to look at the reactions to this movie. First of all, if you needed proof that mainstream movie critics are simply corrupt paid shills of these mega billion dollar content providing conglomerates, look no further than the mainstream media reviews on IMDb of this movie, which are rating it at like 97% positive at one point. This is ludicrous. Whereas the fans are rating it at 56% positive, and these numbers are dropping. And the industry has actually been floating the theory that, oh, this is fake news. It's internet trolls at work bringing these numbers down, right? These people, they'll do anything, basically, to keep pushing their narratives, including their narratives about this disgusting, deconstructed, and cynical cash grab that's going on. And so, it's not working. More people are seeing this movie, and the movie is sinking like a stone now at the box office. Vox Day, at his website, has data comparing day by day how this movie has performed as opposed to The Force Awakens 2 years ago. And it has underperformed, and it is dropping very, very rapidly in the box office. And I'm very encouraged by that. I'm delighted by that. It's still going to make a ton of money, but with these companies, if you make only half a ton of money rather than the 4 tons of money that they were banking on, it's still a flop. And frankly, I hope that this flop resonates around the halls of Disney and some heads roll, and maybe even George Lucas, maybe people who like Lucas's original vision and want to expand on that will actually be involved in the making of future Star Wars movies. Now, there's an interesting story about the Han Solo movie that's supposed to be out next Christmas season. That was given to some hotshot young director, and apparently the geniuses who brought us this abortion didn't like it very much, and so they fired him, and they brought in Ron Howard to finish the movie. Now, I think Ron Howard is a really very good director, and I think that this is a great sign. Why not just do Star Wars anthology films like Rogue One? It's set in that universe. It keeps certain canonical things about the mythos intact. And then it just allows the imagination to range around because fans want to visit there every year. Why not just do that? And why not get really top directors to do it? I think that would be great. It's not like it's a financially risky proposition to make a Star Wars film with an original script and a good director. These right. things will make tons of money. And they are being shown, though, that the soft reboot that deconstructs it and pauses it to the max is not a popular thing. I was so disgusted with The Force Awakens. It was so cynical. This movie was less bad, but still bad. And I'm glad that, and I was so disappointed that the fans did not see through this and boycott this stinker. But they're finally catching up with this new movie. They were going to give that movie a chance. They're thinking maybe it's another Phantom Menace. Maybe the next movie will be good. Maybe we'll get a 2 out of 3 trilogy, right? Again. Yeah. But it's obvious that something's very rotten at Disney, and I think the fans are rebelling. And the paid shills and hacks who are flogging this movie look like what they are. And Disney looks like what it is. So I think this is a great teachable moment for lots and lots of people. And I'm actually rather delighted by this because Star Wars has such a huge and serious audience. To see it being degraded in such a disgusting way I think is very educational to a lot of people. If we can point to what's really going on, if we can use this to illustrate some of the things that we believe, I think this is very, very important. And I don't think Star Wars is all that great. I honestly don't.
It wasn't.
I liked the first movie as a reconstituted movie serial type thing, a Flash Gordon type thing. I enjoyed it. I thought that the sequel, Empire Strikes Back, was a really quite good film. I really still love that film, even though it's got some nerf herder kind of nonsense in it. But it's still a very good film. Everything after that has been ho-hum or terrible, but still pretty much watchable. And I even liked 2 out of 3 of the prequels. But the fact is that it resonates a lot with a lot of our people, as well as non-whites around the globe. They're very white movies, in a way. They draw upon archetypal things. They're genuinely heroic, they're idealistic, they're inspiring, and the one thing that's consistently good throughout them is the fabulous music that John Williams wrote. In fact, my favorite thing about Star Wars is John Williams, honestly. And even this movie has a pretty damn good score. So they have a lot of great things about them, and even though I think that, the people who take it way too seriously have questionable tastes, and maybe they should actually watch good movies and read good literature. But I don't want to be a jerk to them, because what they like about this stuff is good, and it shows that they're good people. And nothing is more disgusting to me than seeing good people exploited by cynical, crappy, evil people. And that's what's going on with these two Disney-fied movies in this new trilogy. Rogue One, like I said, I think it's an okay film. It's actually good. But these two things are so disgusting and so... they really are spitting in the faces of the audience and the fans and Lucas and what made Lucas's things appealing. And that, I think, is evil, and it makes me angry, and I'm glad to see that people are finally getting angry about this as well. So this is a positive sign, culturally speaking, that people are getting angry and rebelling against this.
I hope you're right, Greg. I'm just worried that people who are too young to remember, well, not just the original trilogy, but nowadays, I guess a lot of people don't even remember when the second trilogy came out. But it seems to me like younger people have much lower expectations, just because that's what they've been raised with. And they're more willing to eat this stuff up. I was surprised that not many, but a couple of younger people I know actually told me that they preferred Blade Runner 2049 to the original Blade Runner. And whereas I think Blade Runner 2049 is a masterpiece compared to The Last Jedi, I still think it's far inferior to the original Blade Runner. But I don't know, young people seem to be easily seduced by all the effects and so forth. So maybe the films will fall short for the fans of the originals, but maybe, they can count on this. Maybe that's who they're really aiming at, are these millennials and younger. It's hard to say.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure, though, that a lot of the fans of the original movies were being banked on to attend these things as well. And I think that they're giving it a pass. And let's hope that they open the eyes of some of the younger viewers to what's going on here, too. Honestly, I find these movies with too much CGI in them to be just exhausting to watch. It's like
I agree.
It's like being trapped in a pinball machine, which is why I hated Justice League. I just found it horrible. It's just too overwhelming an experience. And honestly, I would love to see movies made in the future where directors just say, screw CGI. We're going to build sets. We're going to build models. We're going to build rubber masks, and we're going to have, you know, old-fashioned effects. And I honestly think that that would make them a lot better. For instance, I thought the last Alien movie, Alien Covenant, was remarkably free of CGI, and where there was one scene that was practically all CGI, it stuck out like a sore thumb. So anyway, I hope that the CGI thing will peak and recede, and we'll get back to a better form of movie making, a more classic, more real form of movie making. Because honestly, why not just do cartoons if you're going to do it practically everything in CGI and green screens and stuff like that? Why not just do cartoons? Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I that was how I felt. I mean, after the big battle in space and then the rebels get away, there was like no transition. Just suddenly they were on that ice planet and the Imperials were attacking them. And I guess because they already knew they were over time, they didn't bother to explain anything about what happened in between. But I had this sinking feeling in my stomach, like, oh, so now we have to go through a whole nother battle sequence. I guess some of the fans were just happy that, you know, they were AT-ATs again. I mean, it was always very popular from the original films. But I agreed with you. I just thought, oh, this is really too much. We don't need yet another battle.
Yeah, and if they had the battle on the ice planet with the Imperial walkers at the beginning of the movie, that would have been derivative. So to show how artful they are, they stuck it at the end of the movie.
For good yes, time. Yes.
Because Rian Johnson is an artist with integrity. He's not
right.
going to turn in something that's totally derivative, just 98.5% derivative.
Oh, he'll move it around.
Yeah, he'll move it around.
I liked what you did in your Reeves of the equivalents from the original films crossed out. Like Empire, First Order.
Yeah, well, I did that in my first review, and honestly, that's based on a meme that somebody circulated about the Force Awakens. And the meme wasn't complete. I mean, there were even more things that I added to it. But yeah, it wasn't my idea to do that, but it does sort of display just how incredibly derivative the whole thing is.
Right. Well, you also, this actually just occurred to me, talking about the rebels kind of getting cornered on the ice planet. How crappy must the rebels be, or, you know, this republic that, you know, they're out of power. They fight this huge war and get back into power. And then apparently within like 20 or 30 years, the First Order comes back and like virtually wipes them out overnight. I mean, they must be pretty bad at governing if they can't hold on to power for more than a couple of decades.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just the turning of the original trilogy into a farce. It's like everything they fought for disappeared in 20 years or 40 years or whatever. Everything is overturned, and they're back to square one, which just renders everything they fought for nugatory. It's a slap in the face. Basically,
yeah.
Is what they're doing again.
Well, I will say one thing that was positive about the Rose character, the Asian one, is that at least it gave Finn another love interest. Because, I mean, in the first movie, of course, and even somewhat in this one, I mean, they kind of float the idea that Finn and Rey could get together.
Oh yeah, but I think that's a bad idea. Whose time is coming? Definitely, it'll happen in the third movie.
Well, I don't know though, because if Rey's going to be a Jedi, you know, Jedis have to be celibate, right?
Oh well, that's
so.
That's
but
the
then she'll
old
say,
Jedi.
"I'll keep your laws off my body."
Yeah,
Jedi.
keep your Jedi, keep your Jedi laws off my body. Exactly.
Well,
she's going to make up her own mind.
The other thing that occurred to me watching the film was for me, the Rebel Alliance, as it was depicted in this film, it seemed like they were kind of suggesting they were like the tribes of Israel, you know, wandering in the desert. Because they keep emphasizing the fact that, oh, you know, we don't know where we're going to go. You know, we're just going to have to wander in space so we can finally find a base for ourselves. And at the very end, when Rey uses her force powers to almost literally, like, raise the Red Sea, you know, when she has to let the rebels come out of that base on the ice planet. It seemed right to me that was an obvious Red Sea reference. So.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
They threw in a lot of Old Testament stuff, it seemed to me. So the rebels are the Jews, basically, fighting against the evil...
Aryans with their British accents, right?
Right. Well, that was the other thing, was when they were in... they disguised themselves on the command ship in Imperial uniforms, and Finn... And Rose are walking around and nobody looked twice at them. Has there ever been a black Imperial officer shown in any of the other films?
Not that I know of.
Well, they did show an Asian actually on the bridge in the beginning. So we know there's at least one Asian in the Empire. But I don't think they've ever shown a black person in the Empire.
Right. Yeah. The Empire is a white supremacist operation.
Oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff doesn't afford really deep analysis, let's face it.
No,
it's all right on the surface.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just wondering, are there any other thoughts you have, any other impressions?
Oh, I was going to say, I remember in your review you mentioned Benicio del Toro, who actually, I have to admit, I kind of like him as an actor, but of course he was added, I'm sure, for diversity's sake. But then he ends up kind of playing... a cliche Latino character, because he ends up being corrupt and betrays them all. So he didn't really fit the paradigm of being, you know, the noble...
He's Lando Calrissian, basically. He's the off-white rogue who helps and then betrays them to the Empire/First Order.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought he was just a remake of Lando Calrissian.
Well, maybe in the next film he'll come back and turn out to actually be a good guy.
Yes, he'll redeem himself in the next film. Yeah, I'm certain of that. So, I wonder about Snoke, and we know that Mark Hamill's going to be back in the third movie, just with a ghostly glow about him, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering about Snoke, if he'll be back in some ghostly form, or if he was even really there in the throne room being assassinated in the first place. Because, of course, after that we have this new thing that Force users can do, which is project oneself clear across the galaxy, which, of course, Luke does when he has his battle with Kylo Ren on the ice planet. He's not really there, so... Was Snoke really there? Maybe Snoke will be back.
But I wasn't really sure what the point of that was, because he's sort of like, oh, ha ha, I'm not really here. But then he dies from the effort right after that.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, why didn't you just go there? I don't know. It seemed odd to me that he would go to all that trouble when he was going to die anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. If he's going to die anyway, why not put in a real appearance? Well, maybe he just couldn't get there in time. But
yeah,
it is almost a certitude that Luke Skywalker will be back in the next movie. And if that magic worked for him, who knows, it might work for Supreme Leader Snoke. And all these outraged fanboys might have their faith restored in Disney's handling of this franchise. I kind of hope not, honestly. Yeah. Honestly, adding a backstory to Snoke would be a good way of disguising the fact that he's just nothing but a stand-in for the Emperor. But one of the things that was sort of amazing about what was done with Rey's parents, and of course that could be a lie too. Kylo Ren could be lying, right?
Right, that occurred to me.
By killing off Snoke and by saying that Rey's parents are nobodies, it's kind of tipping Disney's hand that these are really not three-dimensional characters anyway.
They're just, right.
They're just stand-ins, like I said, ciphers to create a nostalgia fest reboot to rake in a lot of money. And that's all they mean.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, the Emperor in the original films wasn't very fleshed out. It wasn't until the prequels that you found out his whole backstory.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But, yeah, Snoke, even he doesn't have as much development as the Emperor did in the originals. But who knows? Maybe they'll do one of the standalone films about him.
Oh, yeah. The mind reels. Anyway. Yeah, so I do think they sort of tip their hand, though, if they really are just disposing of these characters so casually, that there's nothing there. There's no there, and there's just really exploiting the fans for their money, which is a terrible thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, yes. Why don't we do another podcast soon about a good film?
Yes, maybe Soderbergh or Scorsese, something like that.
Yeah, we've been talking about Soderbergh and Scorsese. Do you want to do, can you do Soderbergh's Parsifal in the near future, or do you have to go back home and watch that again?
I think my copy of it is back home, but I'll check to see if I brought the drive with me that has it on there.
Okay.
I could also probably find it online somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to do that.
Yeah, I would like to do that too. I think that would sort of cleanse the palate after this distasteful exercise of mulling this particular piece of crap over. So yeah, let's try and do something with Scorsese or Soderbergh, and let's try and do it before the year is out.
Sure.
Great. Well, John, thanks so much for this. I've really enjoyed it, and I hope our audience has enjoyed it as well, and we will be back again very soon for another episode of Countercurrents Radio.
See you next time, everybody.